VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's not about the corner office. It's not about the fancy title. It's not even about the extra money. Responsible leadership is about taking care of those who choose to follow you, and that care takes on many forms. This podcast is dedicated to bringing you the best guests with the best advice to help you succeed in that endeavor. The Responsible Leadership Podcast is a production of The Leadership Phalanx. To find out more about me and what I do, visit leadershipphalanx.com. That's leadership, PHALANX.com. And now, on to today's show. All right, listeners, hello and welcome to this final episode of the Responsible Leadership Podcast. As they say, we save the best for last. I've got a longtime friend, second-time guest, Mr. Jim Bouchard with us today. Jim, thanks for being my my final guest on the show, sir.
I can't tell you what an honor this is. This is really cool. It has been a while, hasn't it?
It has. I was looking August 19, episode 10, back in August 2019. And, you know, for those of you who weren't around then or haven't went back and listened to that episode, you know, Jim is an outstanding speaker, karate hall of famer, all kinds of great stuff. We'll see where we get into that part of his backstory, but his sensei leadership movement and all the things he's done with that have just been fantastic. And he's got a wealth of knowledge, just an outstanding individual. And when he was on the show the last time, we were still called the burden of command. So he's never answered this question. When you hear the words responsible leadership, what does responsible leadership mean to you, Jim?
Means you picked the wrong guest for this last podcast. Of course, I know you're going to dream up something else to do too. But no, well, because you know the backstory. I mean, this whole thing started with anything but responsible, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, the quick backstory. I started young adulthood as a drug addict, and had to find my way out of that mess. And that's what led me to martial arts. And I guess that's what started to teach me a little bit more about responsibility and you know, what it meant to other people. You know, that's an interesting trip because, you know, when somebody's in a state of addiction, whether they want to realize it or not, they're hurting some people around them. There's a responsibility that we might not be aware of at the time, right? And so, you know, that was a large part of working my way out of it. Yeah. And here we are, the 30 year, well, it was, God, how long has it been now? I was going to say more than 30 years career in martial arts. And that accidentally led to the speaking because people started to ask me to share, you know, some of the philosophy of the dojo out in real life. And particularly, you know, it had a lot of resonance in leadership and still does. And here's where we are today. But, you know, what Sensei Leader is all about, started with a question that I had for myself and my instructors is what is a sensei exactly? What exactly does a sensei do? And after a couple of years of thinking about it, we arrived at three basic words. We call them the essential disciplines that a leader needs. And that's to inspire, to empower, and to guide people. And no matter, you know, it has nothing to do with rank, title, or position of authority. I strongly believe, and it's probably more important than ever these days, we are all leaders, whether we recognize it or not, whether we accept that responsibility or not, because I love the word that you chose, you know, for the program, because that's what it's all about. if we accept that responsibility, because you're going to inspire somebody, you're going to empower people around you, you're going to guide them, you're going to bring them to the right outcome or to the wrong outcome. That's the question. And I think that's where the responsibility part kicks in, because you do have to realize, even if you don't think so, you've got an impact on the lives of people around you. And that's what's important. That's why it's so important to acknowledge that responsibility and decide how you're going to manage that. What are you going to do with that resource?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that piece there is so valuable that you highlighted there. And I hope my listeners really honed in on that, is whether you realize or not, you're going to. And I think that's the piece whenever, because I agree with you. I think we're all leaders in some way, shape, or form. You know, it may not be a formal authoritative type. You may not have the title. Mm-hmm. It may just be by your example. You know, how are you driving down the road? Are you using your turn signal, or are you driving crazy and flipping people off? You're leading somebody, right, watching you how you drive and setting an example. It's that simple sometimes. Yeah. Leadership
how
is
how are
simple.
You raising your family, right?
And right.
It's interesting because, you know, that my passion as far as charitable work goes is working with incarcerated kids. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because a lot of times they'll deny that they're leaders, right? I'm not a leader. And, you know, I did this, I did that. I remember one poignant conversation I had with a kid just a couple of years ago after he had successfully led a pretty good sized riot in the facility. And I said, see, you're a leader. And he said, what do you mean? I just, I caused all this trouble. And I said, yeah, that's right. And you got it started. And those guys followed you, didn't they?
Yeah.
You inspired them. You inspired them to do no good. I said, and I'm laughing now in hindsight, but that was a bad situation. They actually hurt somebody very, very badly. Oh. Yeah. And someone who cared a great deal about them. So, but you know, he owned up to it. He accepted responsibility for it. He started to move his life in a different direction. And that's what you have to do. That's an extreme case, obviously. But to some extent, even whether we want to or not, we're all in position where we're affecting other people's lives, and sometimes it's for the better, and sometimes it's not. Even the people who try their best not to harm other folks. No, we have an impact, and sometimes that's not always constructive. So that's part of the responsibility of leadership, right? Isn't it? Just understanding that our actions, our decisions, and our actions mostly, because that's the most inspirational thing about us, right? People follow our actions more than anything else. And we have to decide where it's going, what are the consequences, measure them, be willing to look in the mirror. And if it's going the wrong way, we say, hey, now we've got to change direction. And that's where the management part comes in, right? Because someone who's a leader in a larger organization, you're inevitably going to do some damage. And I find very, very few people who will deny that when we really roll up our sleeves and get talking. Whether you want to or not, whether you intend to or not, there's going to be some damage. And how you're going to deal with that? How you're going to manage that? That's critical.
Yeah. Well, and again, like you just hit it, and I'm glad you kind of circled back on it a second time, because I really hope people, is like, you don't have a choice in it. It's up to the people who are watching you, right? I always start with the you are always on display for that reason, because you don't know who's watching you. It could be somebody a block down the street that you don't even know is looking at what you're watching. We do a lot of stuff on Zoom calls, Google Meets, whatever now, right? It could be somebody watching a video you did 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're never going to meet that person, but you are leading, influencing them.
Your Facebook post you forgot about, that tweet, right? And how many, if we're going to stray into political leadership for just a second, how often does that come back to bite somebody in the rear end, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, there's, I hate to say it because it has become almost a cliche. If you say, the words lead by example, how important is leading by example? I mean, you'll find very few people who will deny that's, that's one of the most critical parts of leadership. But at the same time, you have to ask yourself, what is that example that you're putting out there? And is it, and here's a great circle back to the martial arts life. I wish I could remember this guy's name. Wrote some great books. He was a martial artist and a psychologist, and he wrote some great books for kids. And he was trying to explain to parents why when you come in the dojo, we're so fussy about how the kids arrange the shoes, right? Take off your shoes and you arrange your shoes and your coats and make everything neat and clean. And really the whole point of it is not about the shoes at all. It's about if you can discipline yourself to take care of the smallest details, then you're going to manage the bigger ones better. If you're careless about the small details, you're not likely to manage the big ones very well. And of course, you know, I'm looking at your Marine Corps flag over your shoulder, right? How many times did you hear that in your Marine Corps life? How many, you know, during your training, how much emphasis was placed on the smallest details?
Oh, yeah.
And right, that's where everything was conditioned. And you weren't even given a bigger responsibility to, you could demonstrate that you could handle those smaller ones, right?
Right. Yeah. You couldn't even go to the rifle range until you could clean the rifle. Right. Mm-hmm. Same basic concept, right?
Well, and making your beds, right? That's a perfect parallel. Sure. In the dojo, we talk about the shoes, but all of my friends that served, you know, talked about that ritual. You had to make that bed. You had to tuck those corners. Everything had to be perfect.
And right? And
polish
the shoes,
your buckles, right?
Yeah. And the shoes, right? They gave us the diagram. You had to have the shoes, like, and there was the order because we had our jungle boots. We had mm-hmm. our what we called our Cadillacs. We had our sneakers. They all had to be in the right order and the right mm-hmm. angles. And I mean, so yeah, you're 100% right. But yeah, until you could take care of the small things, and it was a progression, and it was that way.
Yeah.
And again, so I like that kind of tie in because, you know, I think this is the one thing, and you know, you've worked with a lot of organizations as well. I think that progression of responsibility is the one thing that is really missing in a lot of organizations and a lot of leadership development programs, right? Is we see a lot of people get in trouble, like they're put in a formal leadership role, mm-hmm. and then they start struggling. We ask, like, what is your development road look like? Well, I got promoted yesterday. Okay, well, how did you get prepared to be in this position? Mm-hmm. I got promoted yesterday. Mm-hmm. Nobody prepared you. Nobody gave you skills. No, I got promoted yesterday.
No, it's true. And sadly today, there's a lot of warm body promotions, right? They just need somebody to fill that slot. No, you're hitting on so many important points there. And, you know, ultimately, the greatest responsibility that a leader has when they're in, I like the way you termed it, formal leadership position, is the responsibility for the lives of others, for the development and the success of others. That's your job. In fact, I would argue this, the only true measurement of a leader's success is the success of the people who trust in their leadership, right?
Yep.
I mean, if your people are successful, you're successful. If they fail, you fail. That's it. It's that simple. So to be able to accept that responsibility for the lives and the livelihood of others, when you're, we use the term management to separate it a little bit, right?
Right.
When you're in the hierarchy, we're going to call those management positions. Now, it'd be nice if all managers were competent leaders. We all know that's not the case, right?
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the part of the development, and you're right. And it always starts with the smaller things. But once you're in that position too, I don't want to confuse smaller with the simple things, because the most, and I learned this in my life as a martial artist, the most powerful things are usually the simplest things. They're also usually the hardest things to do and the hardest things to maintain discipline in. And that big one, which is really, I'll tell you, it's nice that it's coming around to it again, but it's also scary that it is. This whole idea that the most important thing a leader can do is to care for the people that leader serves, you know?
Yes.
And if nothing else, then for the practical reason, I mean, it's bombproof. People perform at their best when and only when they know their leaders care. That's number one. Their work has meaning, and they have the chance to learn and grow and develop. Now, that's brutally simple, extremely hard to carry out. It requires a lot, and it's not always efficient, right? It's sometimes expensive. And there's where the swords cross, I guess, because too many times in our society now, we're looking for the efficiency, we're looking for the least expensive option. And no, we're talking about caring for other human beings. We can't take shortcuts.
Well, and again, that goes back to both being fans of Eastern philosophy. We go back to a text that was written almost 2,600 years ago, Sun Tzu's Art of War. And one of those pieces was Sun Tzu says, treat your soldiers as if they were your own precious sons.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about that exact thing. So this is something, again, We're talking about somebody who was a renowned general, I can't speak. I don't know why I can't get. That's it. A strategist.
Strategist.
I speak for a living, but
no, I hear you. That's the foible of our profession. Professional speaker.
Exactly. But you know, the point is, you know, nobody would necessarily call him warm and cuddly, I don't believe. Yeah. But he's talking about what we're just talking about here: caring for your people, treating mm-hmm. them like, you know, it's okay to treat them and care for them like their family. Because it's what they expect. It's what people want out of their leaders, right? It's leaders who care. I love the way Dr. Brené Brown put it when she said, you know, people give a damn if you give a damn.
It's that simple. Simple, not easy, right? That's the thing. We always use that analogy, you know, getting a black belt, simple. Practice. It's not easy, right? Right. But I also think, and I don't want this to go water over the dam here. When you're talking about this, especially with your experience and your background and the admiration I have for you and the others who have served in the military, because one of my greatest regrets is that I didn't, you know, I had originally had a goal to be in the Coast Guard Academy, didn't make it. Then I was going to enlist in the Coast Guard. For some reason, I didn't do it. Now, I mean, in hindsight, hey, I had some great adventures. I can't regret the life that I had, but if I had to have one regret, it's that I didn't serve. I think my life would have taken a much different turn. But the thing is, the important part of that is now that I've gotten to know and been friends with so many incredible military leaders like yourself, you know, if you ask the average person on the street, they would see the military leader as a command and control type of authoritarian, that stigma is still there. And it's completely the opposite. I've met the most compassionate leaders who are military leaders. Right, even by necessity, your life depends on the people around you in real terms. I had a little taste of that in the fire service, but that, you know, that's what it is. Yeah. Patton, who's often, I think, in the cliched, he's become the cliche of the authoritarian leader, right? But, you know, in studying him, I know you're a great fan of his too. You read his books, you read the books people close to him wrote. And he cared about his troops, like, as you just quoted Sun Tzu, as if they were his own family.
Right.
And but sometimes the irony of that is, right, in that kind of position, you're in the extreme where you know that sometimes you have to put the people you love at great risk, at ultimate risk. And that doesn't make you less compassionate, not the experience that I've seen. It makes you more compassionate.
Oh, yeah. No, I had in one of the leadership courses I had when I was in the Marines, I had one person define military leadership as the willingness to put your troops in harm's way, knowing that they could die. But the thought of doing so has to rip your heart out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if it doesn't do that, you need to not be in a military leadership role.
No, then that's pretty much the definition of a psychopath, right?
Right.
And there are plenty of psychopaths in management positions in all walks of life. And, you know, that's the danger of it, right? All these things we're talking about, people who want to use it for, you know, completely selfish ends or evil ends even. They have access to the same power, the same information, the same education that all of us do. So, you know, that's why it's so important for us to choose our leaders carefully, I think, when we do put them in management positions.
Yeah. And I think that is the big responsibility that current leaders have. So going back to that progression of responsibility, right, kind of tying this piece together, is you have to start giving that responsibility and building that through as soon as somebody walks through the door.
So soon as somebody walks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The kids, my God, you just open up a can of worms. Because I remember arguing with a parent one time. I was sitting down with my little dragons. It's funny too, because since I've left, you know, the schools behind, I'll run into sometimes my black belts, you know, and they'll say, "Hey, Sensei, do you miss us?" I said, "Oh, hell no. you guys are whiners. I miss my little guys, my little dragons, 3 to 6 year olds, right?"
Yeah.
And so anyway, one of the parents came in because she caught me having, we just sit down on the floor and talk. And we were talking about respect and we were talking about responsibilities. And she said, you know, it's nice that you have those talks. She said, but, you know, those kids don't understand what you're saying. I said, nope, not yet. They don't. I said, but when do you want them to start hearing it? I said, you know, this is the time. This is when this should be going in, not whatever horse hockey happens when they're sitting down at that video panel. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, cause there's so many lessons we learned then that we don't know we learn until the light bulb goes off.
Cause yeah, yeah.
I still remember, and I shared it so many times on this podcast. I'll share it again. My listeners are like, girl, we're tired of hearing it, but oh, well, you're going to hear it one more time. One of the wisest things my grandfather ever told me was we were going through, I don't even remember where it was now, but there was a statue of some guy, right? And I asked my grandfather, you know, like who it was. And he read the nameplate. And I'm like, why did they build a statue of this guy? And he reads the words there. And then like, just, he kind of thinks for a second. He says, you know what, son, when I die, I'd rather have people asking why they didn't build a statue in my honor than asking why they did.
Hmm.
I'm like, that's legacy right there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when people are asking why they didn't, that means people know who yeah. you are without mm-hmm. having to have a statue there
yeah.
to tell you that you existed. People remember, people know, they're begging for remembrance, not you're right. forcing remembrance. That's legacy.
Right. And it, you know, what's interesting too, is you're talking about that because people will often ask, well, how do you become a leader like that? Right. And the pure fact is, and it's interesting because Jordan Peterson talks about this quite a bit. You know, hierarchy is wired into us. I mean, that's yeah. part of our makeup as a social animal, right? It's unavoidable. I mean, you can't not have hierarchy. It begins to construct itself organically. Now, when does that start happening? Well, it happens as soon as we open our eyes, we're able to hear, we're able to listen, we're here to, able to walk and talk. And so that conditioning can start very early. And I'm not a believer in what's traditionally known as the natural born leader. But I do absolutely believe, and the science seems to be behind us on this, that as human beings, we have this innate disposition toward hierarchy and towards the emergence of leadership. Now, how does that take shape in the modern world? How does it take shape as we get older? There really isn't that much difference between us and as 50, 60, 70-year-old person than we were when we were 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. All right. The maturity, and this is another thing that Peterson hits on, and he's a hero of mine anyway, but he talks about that acceptance of responsibility, right? That maturity is really the assumption of more or greater responsibilities. When we're little kids, we're dependent, right? As we emerge, we become more independent and interdependent in a healthy sense. We're accepting more responsibility. That's the mark of leadership. Now, that can get really tricky, can't it? Because at the same time, I think one of the greatest problems that we face right now is a trend towards willful dependency. Does that make sense? So there's so many more people who don't want to assume that responsibility. They don't want to mature as human beings for whatever reason. We can argue that till the cows come home, but it's happening. There's no doubt about the fact that it's happening. And we have a couple of generations that are severely crippled by that and wanted to, and I know you and I are pretty much like-minded in this respect as a rule. They want government, for example, to step in and become their parents or their providers. And then there are those of us who, no, we don't want government to dictate to us. We, you know, we see the construct of our society a little bit differently. Who's right and who's wrong? Well, we're going to be fighting that one out for the next 50 years. I don't know which way it's going to go. You know, yeah. I won't be around so I'm not that trouble. I'm not going to see the collapse of civilization. I'm not going to last that much longer.
You got another 50 in you. I got faith. But I think Peterson is a perfect example, right? Because, you know, getting to that level is hard. It takes yeah. effort. It takes work. And mm-hmm. because Peterson's one of those folks, I know there's a lot of people like, I mean, I'm sure even in my listeners right now, there's some people, as soon as you said Jordan Peterson's name, they were like, okay, I'm changing channel right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
he's one of those types of people, like if you do the easy thing and you listen to sound bites, it's very easy to think, oh man, this is one of the most wretched human beings that walks the face of the earth. Because the sound bites get cherry picked to make him sound that way.
Mm.
But once you listen to what the guy says in full context of what he is saying, it's like, ah, okay. This makes sense. Like, it's not this just soundbite thing.
Like, it makes sense, it makes me think, right? That's exactly the other thing too. And when you hear him talk, that's one of the big things. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but on several occasions I've heard him say, and I think a lot of great thinkers, this really distinguishes them, where they'll say something to the effect, this is how I understand it right now.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean this is fixed at all. Sure. I'm not imposing my opinion on you. Sure. Let's start from here. Let's start the conversation. And you have to be willing to poke the hornet's nest. I think I got myself in real bad trouble at a college gig one time. I had the dean of students approach me afterwards. I thought the whole presentation went great. Did two sessions. The kids were just terrific. They were asking tough questions. We got into some really tough discussions. This was about the time Matt Lauer had gotten himself into trouble at NBC. So we were talking about that and how you're managing that and how you, right? Well, at the end of the whole thing, I was approached. I think she was the dean of students. And she was very upset that I had victim shamed. Mm. And I said, really? I said, how do you think I did that? Well, the kids, this in a nutshell, the kids had asked, what's the answer to this? You know, I said, well, answers. Another person who can piss some people off. I'm thinking of Thomas Sowell and how he said there really aren't any solutions. There are only trade-offs. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that bit of wisdom. So anyway, in the emergence of all that, I said, yeah, no, there are people out there who behave badly. I said, the only thing we can do is have the courage to face them. I said, when you look at that, there was a dearth of courage along the way. That was interpreted as the victim shaming. Right. And what I was trying to explain, I said, no, I said, I'm not saying, I understand. I think her argument was that it's perfectly okay. There were two young women who had been victims of sexual assault in that audience, and that was her concern. Now, the kids didn't say anything. They didn't have an issue. But having said that, the fact that I had emphasized the courage was supposed, in her mind, shaming them because they didn't report it. They didn't write. And she said, that's okay. Now we can have that argument because I don't believe it's okay. If someone does me harm and I don't stand up, at least to face it, it's not healthy for me. Right. And it's not right. It's not, there's no road to recovery there. You've got to face it. And I may be allowing that perpetrator to go on and do harm to others. Having said that, if it's the choice you make and that's what you need to survive, I get it. And I'm not judging that, right? But you're going to have to live with that. But I said that the counter to that, I said, so I'm not vilifying the person who chooses for whatever reasons to stay silent. What I am saying is that the only way out of that situation is courage. Mm-hmm. And courage is tough. I mean, courage is not the absence of fear. The absence of fear is stupidity. So right. Courage by definition means you're facing what scares you and you're doing what you need to do, even though it's painful. Not expedient, whatever the case may be. So anyway, that's, and the reason I'm beating that drum so loudly is because that's another issue that we're seeing in our society right now. Easy to stick your head in the sand. It isn't ironic when we're deluged by every detail on social media of everybody's life. And at the same time, people want to stick their head in the sand and say, that's not happening. You know?
Well, it's, but I want to touch on that for a second because I've been in the same position, right? Because I made the comment, the way I put it was, you've only got, in that situation, you've only got two choices. Mm. You deal with it or you deal with it, right? Mm-hmm. You deal with the problem, mm-hmm, or you deal with the fact that it's happening, right? I mean, mm-hmm, and that's it. And I got the same feedback. I said, no, I'm not upset at them. I said the same thing. I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
But I said, the problem is you, right? I'm mad, mm-hmm, at you, right? Mm-hmm. We got into talking about responsible leadership.
Yeah.
The reason, and this is for organizations that are listening, this is for my C-suite executives. This, mm-hmm, isn't just for college campuses, but I know some of those folks listen too. The reason those young women primarily, but it happens to young men as well, much smaller percentage, but it does happen. The reason that they're afraid to report is because they have a sincere and honest belief that you won't do anything with what they report.
Right. Or may even make you feel less for having brought that forward. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not victim shaming in the least bit. It's advocating for them that you need to do a better job taking care of them when they report, so they feel more comfortable reporting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, because you mentioned, you alluded this a few minutes ago. It's very difficult. And this is one of the, I think, one of the most important characteristics of a truly effective leader is and we're back to compassion and empathy again, being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes to a degree, being able to, right, to try to understand whether you agree or not, whether it's something you should tolerate or not, right? But being able to take a look at it from another person's perspective. And what's very interesting is that sometimes when we're accused by somebody like the situations you and I just went through, it's fascinating to me that the person who's victimizing us at that point, or trying to, right? Because we're not allowing it, but they often lack that perspective. So when I heard that, I thought, you know, I think she had accused me too. She said, "You have no idea what it's like to be the victim of a sexual assault." And I thought, how does this person know that? How does this person know that I wasn't a victim of a sexual assault? You know, I've thankfully not much, but I've spent time in jail a little bit. I wasn't raped in jail, not prison, just for the record. But you know, that kind of thing. I said, you don't know what happened to me in my life. You didn't know if I was abused by relatives. You don't know. So I think, again, it's a mark of maturity in leadership to, you got to back off a little bit. And the irony there is, right, some of the most effective leaders are judgmental people. Leaders have to make decisions. They have to exercise judgment. At the same time, and now we're back to our Eastern philosophy, right? A and B can both be true. So we can both be judgmental, and we can also train ourselves to withdraw that judgment and keep it at a distance as we weigh the situation. And then we can return in a positive way, right, to exercise the judgment, which hopefully will be more responsible and more informed at that point. Boy, that got thick, didn't it? But
no, but it's a valuable point, right? Because, you know, I do a decent amount with diversity and inclusion stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's what I talk about is, like, you know, with biases, right? My mission is to destigmatize the word bias, right? Because bias has become synonymous with racist, and it's not. What it is.
Yeah.
Bias is a preference. Having biases isn't bad. Bias is a survival mechanism.
It's inevitable, right? It's inevitable. Yeah.
It's exactly. It's, we all have them. It's what do we do with them, right? Mm-hmm. Are we aware that they exist?
Yeah.
And can we calibrate for how they're influencing our decisions?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what you're talking about there, right? Is, yeah, it's okay to have these judgments. But are we aware that these judgments exist? Are they influencing our decisions? And are we able to kind of step back and calibrate our decisions? Because we know prejudice, prejudging prejudice,
without
prejudging the situation.
Right. Without knowledge and without experience, which is really the part that gets left out of that definition sometimes. Right.
Right.
And you're hitting it again, right on the nail right on the head, because ultimately as leaders, it's what we do with that information and that experience. Are we going to make decisions that are going to move myself and the organization forward, or am I going to make decisions that are going to be detrimental?
Yeah.
But there's the other part of it. I mean, it's inescapable. And I know you work with C-suite groups too. Our sensei in the C-suite program, we often get, you know, once we get into a little bit and people let their hair down, so to speak, not me, but I let all my hair down a long time ago.
Right? Goodness.
But it's when you really just start to talk as human beings, you find that folks really appreciate those situations and will come to an understanding that, right, I have these biases, I have these faults, if you will, and how can we manage those constructively? At the same time, knowing that my best decision can be bad for somebody. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's inescapable. Whenever I hear leaders lament that, say, geez, you know, I just don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to cause any harm. I said, well, then don't accept the management position. Don't accept a formal leadership position. Now you're trying to minimize it and you're definitely trying not to harm people with intent unless they deserve it. Let's put that one. Yeah. So, that's it. I wish I had a nicer perspective for leaders, but that's one that you have to embrace. You have to expect it. And you have to manage as it comes, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, sure. Yeah. And you see that a lot with firing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's well, the one. And it's getting leaders to realize you can fire with care.
You can. And sometimes I know you've encountered this before. I'm sure. Sometimes you're firing somebody, even though it sucks, because nobody who's compassionate likes to fire people. Except, you know what? I shouldn't say that. Every time I ask that question when I'm doing a workshop, I'll say, has anybody ever fired somebody? Everybody raised their hand. I said, did you like it? And once in a while, I'll have somebody raise their hand. And as soon as they do, I say, you have a specific person in mind, don't you?
Exactly. Right? Yeah, there's that one. There's always one.
Yeah. And of course, usually they deserved it. And that's the point, that sometimes you're doing more harm by tolerating it. We can go back to the Matt Lauer story there, right? And you're harming other people. And sometimes it's the best thing for that person. They needed to change too, and they might not have the courage to make that change. That's why they're slacking in the job, right? That's why they're causing trouble, or that's why they're disgruntled or taking their anger out on other people. All these things that can happen, right?
And
so the best thing all the way around sometimes is to, again, we're back. What we're back. We're always back to the fundamentals.
Have
the courage to stand up and do it. And it sucks sometimes. Right? We don't sugarcoat things, you and I, right? It sucks.
No, it does.
Sucks. But it's going to be painful. Mama never says it's going to be easy.
No, but, you know, as they say, that's the cost of doing business, right?
And it's the price you pay, because along with these great responsibilities we're talking about, there are often great rewards. And I'm not talking about monetary. I'm talking about how we change and affect people's lives. But there's where we talked a little bit before the show about the AI thing coming. Yeah. That's where it's going to be really critical, because... And I get it. Leaders, particularly in business and in politics, are going to be making decisions that are going to be crushing people's lives.
Yeah.
And maybe you can make a case that in the long haul, that's going to be, that's progress for humanity in general, progress for society in general. But we are going to be crushing people's lives, or at least changing them severely coming up. And more important than ever, that we get back in touch with the humanity that's required to lead effectively and to care for people as we're upsetting people's lives with this new technology. This is going to be an interesting few years, I think, coming up.
Well, it really is, right? Because the interesting thing about AI, and a lot of people are seeing AI as, oh, this is the answer. This is the end all be all. This is... And, you know, it's a tool, right?
Yeah.
It is a tool. But what have we seen in all of these kind of closed circuit tests where they've just let AI run amok, right? AI is it's human evolution. It's really just human evolution accelerated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what you see, what we've seen here, I mean, and you've read the stories of, oh, hey, who was it? Facebook a few years ago, like when they let their AI kind of run wild, and like within, I don't know, it was like 30 minutes, it developed its own language and they couldn't understand what it was saying. And so they had to shut it down. And what was the one recently where within like 30 minutes, it had like started plotting the end of humanity or something?
Yeah.
Like
it wanted to wipe us all out. And, you know, that gets weird too, because, you know, it's interesting. I've been so fascinated by it that I'm now reading several books about the origins of AI, and it goes back. This is decades old. This is not a new problem. The idea that, all right, if we don't want a machine to run amok and blow up the planet, don't plug it into the nuclear system. You know what I mean?
Well,
it can't wire itself into these systems. So that's where we have to accept a lot of responsibility. But on the other end too, you hit the nail right on the head again. It's only a feedback mechanism, very sophisticated one, but that's what it is. And it's, we're only going to get out what can put in. Now, I just wrote an article about this. I'll share a little bit of it with you. I actually asked ChatGPT, which is, you know, one of the most prominent AI programs out there. And I asked it about its role in leadership. And basically, I'm going to cut it down to the fundamentals. Basically, it said it can't lead. It admitted itself. And I asked it why. And it said, because it's not capable of compassion. That was the first thing it said.
Love it.
I'm not capable of compassion. This is it. And they said, I can provide information that will help leaders make better decisions. I'm paraphrasing a little, but I'm trying to remember as accurately as I can. I ultimately cannot assume responsibility because I have no conscience.
Yeah, it's good that it's that level of self-aware. And that's exactly where I was going to go. You were absolutely right, because going back to that bias piece, right? And that's where there's this whole thing about ethics and AI, because what we're noticing and what they're really starting to realize is they keep saying, well, AI is free of bias because of that lack of consciousness. Well, that may be true, but the people who are coding the AI have a bias, and that bias is embedded in the coding. And as AI is learning, it's making decisions based off the coder's bias. So that coder's bias is getting perpetuated much quicker, which means the AI learns with the coder's bias, right? And listeners, I want to, I know it's going to sound self-serving as all hell, but I want to amplify what Jim just said. This is the one piece where you can't afford to not spend the money on the training. Whether it's me, whether it's Jim, whether it's, we've got dozens of colleagues that we would gladly recommend, right? When the things that we talk about, caring for people, looking out for them, getting them to care and look out for other people, that's going to be the customers. That's going to be their coworkers. That means those sales numbers are going to start looking better. That means employee engagement's going to go up. That means innovation's going to go up. That means recruitment, retention, all those things are going to get better. So all those things that you say are more important, you're actually doing a disservice to by not paying attention to the thing that you are trying to say is less important. And you're going to be spending a lot more money up here at the high level, where you could have spent, you know, thousands of dollars on us to come in and do workshops and this sort of stuff. The point is, you could do a lot more return on investment, if that's what you're really worried about, by bringing us in, taking care of the leadership piece, because it is going to affect all of those areas. And we've seen it. We've seen it happen time in and time out.
And it's the leader who needs to make that. That's it. You imagine just moving that a point in the right direction, and how much money that's worth, how many billions of dollars that's worth, just to get and I'll put it in, let's bring it down to earth. That means getting somebody to do good work for about 10 minutes more every day.
Sure.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing too with that number, right? It's like they say there's 70% of the workforce is disengaged. Mm-hmm. It's 52% is actively disengaged. So 70% of the people are coming to work and showing up and doing the bare minimum. 70%.
Right. Right.
That 52% that Jim's talked about actively disengaged
means they're choosing to.
Well, yeah, they're essentially sabotaging work while they're there. They're looking for other jobs. They're surfing Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. They're maybe even shooting TikTok videos at work. Like they're doing anything else but work while you're paying them to be at work. Right. That's what actively disengaged means.
I didn't mean to let those videos out, but of course I caught myself and I fired myself that day. On the spot, I said, Jim, you can't be doing this stuff. You're wasting your life. You're wasting your time. Yeah.
Turns out I'm not an influencer.
No, I had to hire myself back the next day. That's the problem with being self-employed, right?
Well, speaking of, before we get out of here, man, we've already been chatting about 45 minutes here. I can't believe time has flown. You've got your show back up and running, huh? Walking the Walk?
Yeah, we do. So let's get you on that. Yeah, let's get you on that coming up. I'm sorry, I haven't been more active. We're still trying to get one or two out a month. We've been okay with that. We should do more because there's so many cool people to talk to. But yeah, let's get you on that show. Walking the Walk, just go to thesenseileader.com and you'll find the links to that. You'll link back to this program because, right, this is going to be evergreen. Mr. Breon is leaving the program, but he set this inventory of great information out there, which is going to live. It's going to keep going and we're going to keep sharing it. And there's all kinds of good stuff out there. There's no excuse for us not to be informed these days. There's so many good people doing this good work.
Yeah. No, it's, and you know, you've got some great shows out there already. And yes, I'd be honored to be a guest on your show, Jim, anytime. And, but folks, go check it out. You know, we'll get the links up to Jim's site, but go check out his work. Go follow him on social media. The stuff you put out, the articles you write, the insight. You pose some very insightful, very thought provoking questions. And that's one of the things I love about being friends with you on Facebook and following your stuff. It's like, I don't know that there's a day that goes by, I don't see something from you that makes me go, huh, okay, let me think about this for a little bit.
Well, that's what we should do as a joint seminar in, because it's cool. I mean, you know, in the essentials and in the important things, I think we're very much in alignment, but that doesn't mean we agree all the time. And we've had some really good debate back and forth over the years, and respectful debate, and it opens up. People need to do that more. I think it's not bad to, you know, for people to explore our interchanges, but, we could talk for another couple hours just about that. Right. We've got to get people dialoguing again and being able to talk about difficult things. So that's always fun. And that's a lot of what happens there. So, and I like what you said. I don't bring a whole lot of solutions to anybody. I cause a lot of trouble, and then we'll start, right? We stoke the fires a little bit, and then maybe down the line we'll find some good trade-offs.
Yeah. I mean, and that's education, right? I mean, I think that's education in its purest form. It's not teaching people something. It's getting them to think and find out.
Well, there's no formula to I don't care what anybody says. There's no formula to leadership. There isn't. I think we can facilitate discussions. We can get people talking. We can share ideas. We can share good ideas. We can share our experiences, share our mistakes, and then together, collectively, right, in the room, virtually or otherwise, that's where people can go off on their own and create their own design, leadership design, because that's what it is. As a leader, you've got to create yourself as a leader. You've got to create your leadership. And I should add this, I'm going to steal from the Marines. I know Lao Tzu said it a long time ago too. You guys probably stole it from him. But how did you guys say? Adapt and overcome, right? Be flexible,
improvise, adaptable, adapt and overcome.
Yeah. I think the way Lao Tzu said it is, be paraphrasing, be flexible, adaptable, and comfortable with uncertainty, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? Like the number one, and I don't know about you, but the number one question I get is, okay, how can I do this in my organization, right? It's like, look, that after giving a class or period of instruction or whatever we're doing, right? It's like, look, that's way too complex of a question to answer. You know,
it's a great question to ask, isn't it? Because that's what's going to get you moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Because I'm like, you know, Seneca famously said, a man can never step in the same river, for it's never the same man and it's never the same river. Right. Yeah. A leadership solution is never going to solve the same problem, because it's never the same problem and it's never the same people. Right. Your people are too complex. The situation is going to be different. You are different. Like that's another place where Jim and I can add value. People like us can add value, is we can help you look at this particular problem. Our job is to give you a set of skills and help you be able to figure out how to apply them and get comfortable applying them. It's not to say, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're going to see A. We can't do that. We're not that good.
If we come away from Asia for a second, we go over to Greece. Pliny the Elder, this is beautiful. It sounds so stupid when you first hear it, but think about it, and it becomes very profound. The only certainty is uncertainty, you see? And I think the best, well, I don't think this, I know this. I shouldn't say that. It's a bad habit to use that throwaway, I think. I know this with absolute certainty. The best leaders are not the people with all the answers, right? People with all the answers. We usually have a different name for them. Starts with an A, ends with whole. You know? The best leaders are the people who've disciplined themselves to ask the right questions and continually do that, because it's what you just said. The conditions are always changing. The circumstances are always changing. So to be facile in asking the right questions, and it's the question, what, again, back to Thomas Sowell, I love that you said that. There aren't any solutions. There are trade-offs. So in the moment, we're doing the best we can. And then 10 minutes later, and here's, I don't know if I don't want to totally let leaders off the hook, but I'll do it a little bit. If you're sincere, and if you embrace the skills that we're talking about today, you can't make the wrong decision. if you're acting with the best intentions, with the best spirit, with other people's, you know, best outcomes in your heart, you can't make a bad decision. Now, 10 minutes after you make that decision, it may turn out to have been the wrong decision, right? But you did the best you could. Now, the next thing you have to do is face that, which is, again, a change in circumstances, and then move ahead from there. And most of the time, I mean, these studies have been done so many times. Successful people are the people who fail 99% of the time.
And, it's the old Mike Tyson's, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right?
Oh, I don't know how much I know about that. That's how I got so pretty, right? I was told, no, hey, I was a fighter. I didn't say I was a very good one.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's valuable. You know, what Jim just said is extremely valuable, and it's good stuff. And one more time, just so everybody gets it, where can they find out more about you, the things you're doing? They want to work with you. They want to bring you in to be part of their organization and bring some of this sensei knowledge. How can they get a hold of you?
Well, thanks for that. The easiest way is thesenseileader.com. Just come to that. And we are going to be doing a media blitz coming up pretty soon. So hopefully people will hear about us and, you know, different media outlets and whatnot, and we can connect that way. So yeah, thesenseileader.com, and please reach out. Let's start the conversation. Absolutely. You know, I suck at sales anyway, so I'm not going to try to talk you into anything. If it's a good fit, and it's just as important from my side, if you're not willing to embrace what we've just talked about in this program, if you're not willing to put your people first, if you're not willing to really, you know, lead with compassion, lead with honor, lead with courage, then it's not a good fit. Go find somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Well, brother, I really appreciate the time here. It's been great. It's been a great conversation. I can't think of a better way or a better guest in this show with. Listeners, thank you for being along with this ride. It's been a little over 4 years on the show. And, you know, I know some of you have been with me since day one. Some of you maybe started listening just with this episode. Go back and listen. There's 260 of them other than this one, and every one of them is a gem, even the ones where I'm just talking by myself. Not a Jim Bouchard, but a gem like the stone there. I got to be my Tennessee accent. You can't tell the difference between the two words sometimes, but they're all great. I've had a lot of great guests. I've been blessed to have many outstanding guests on this show, running a wide range of topics. And I just, you know, as Jim said, this content is evergreen. This is always going to be up. Thanks to my friends at ElectriCast. They've told me that they're always going to keep the show up. They're going to keep it up and running. And if by some chance they go under, I'll got all my files. I'll pull them down and I'll host it somewhere else. I want to make sure that it's up there for y'all. But I really appreciated getting a chance to have these conversations, bringing this content with y'all, hearing the feedback, knowing that you've enjoyed the guest, knowing that I've been able to bring some of this information and expose some of y'all to these thoughts. Many great books out there. I know I've kind of highlighted some of my desk reference books. Jim's Book of Five Rings is one of those. You need to go check that out. The new Book of Five Rings, I should say. You definitely need to get a copy of that if you haven't already. But on that note, Jim, again, thank you, my brother, for being the closeout guest on this show. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate you. I wish you and Alex all the best of luck with everything you're doing. And brother, just keep trucking on. And thank you for being a guest on the Responsible Leadership Podcast.
Well, thank you. It's an honor. And thank you for everything you've done with your life, dedicating your life to leadership. And I can't wait to see what your next adventure is going to bring.
Well, all right, folks, there you have it. Another great show about responsible leadership. I really appreciate you listening. And if you have any feedback for me, please reach out at earl@leadershipphalanx.com. That's earl@leadershipphalanx.com. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing, and sharing the show so these messages can spread further and make a bigger impact. With that, I look forward to speaking with you again in the next episode.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with ElectriCast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of ElectriCast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join ElectriCast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast, transform your influence.
Electricast.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Pact podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Pact podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Electricast.